Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
Hi, everybody. This is Harvey Slugo Wasserman back for another week with the Zoom, the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition Zoom. This is number 33, if you can believe that. We've been going since the summer. This will be the last one of the year. Next week, we're going to await the outcome. January 5th and 6th are going to be two of the biggest days in American history. On January 5th, we have the runoff election in Georgia, which we're going to talk about at great length today. And then on January 6th, the Congress will be presented with the outcome of the Electoral College, which we want to abolish. Hopefully 4 years from now, we won't be talking about the Electoral College anymore. But next week being the Monday before that fateful Tuesday and Wednesday, if you are following election protection, if you're concerned about the outcomes of the races, the three races in Georgia, the two Senate seats and the Public Service Commission, we'd like you to be doing what you do. And we will wait a week wrap it up and to go into 2021 and to launch our four-year campaign to get rid of the Electoral College, to end gerrymandering, or Jim Crow mandering, as we're calling it now, and to straighten up our election system. And I will tell you that we're going to have a very powerful and hopeful and gratifying report from Michigan, where well under the radar screen, tremendous steps forward have been made with election protection, with the help, to a certain extent, of Arnold Schwarzenegger, of all people. But there have been great strides forward in getting rid of gerrymandering and other election abuses in the state of Michigan. And we will start 2021 with a big report on that, and we will launch our four-year campaign. Joel Siegel, Ray McClendon, and I, and the rest of you who want to join in, please, to totally revamp how we choose our officials in this country. It's a big deal, and we will know come early January, after the 5th and 6th, as to what direction this country might be headed in. But we have a direction we want to send it, and that is to a country without an electoral college, without Jim Crow mandering, with hand-counted, hand-marked paper ballots, money out of politics, all that stuff. And Joel Siegel is going to be right there with us. Joel, you want to say a quick word, and then we're going to go to Ray McClendon and Gene. I do want to welcome everybody who's listening in on the Progressive Radio Network. This is our weekly call, and you will be podcast on Thursday, 5 to 6 p.m., Eastern Time at prn.fm. And if you want to hear the whole mishpacha that goes for another half hour after that, take a listen at www.grassrootsep.org or electionprotection2024.org. Joel, I know you got to run, so you want to say a word or two before you do?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're good.
So Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy New Year.
Happy Buddha's birthday, Happy Kwanzaa, and Happy Trump departure.
Yeah, definitely Happy Trump departure. So I want to thank you for your leadership, Harvey, for bringing this coalition together. You put a lot of work into it, and Stephen Crusoe and Mike Hirsch, you know, who've been producing this. But basically, what I want to say is that we know voter suppression is going to get worse as the country's demographic gets blacker and browner and younger. The far right wing of the Republican Party, in particular, have already started, and Ray's going to talk about this in his presentation. But the need for like a full time, non-fragmented election protection system can't happen unless we have a coalition of conscience. And I think this is, we've built one. And basically what we want to do is have a, like an election protection fusion movement. And the fusion movement has been very successful with Dr. William Barber's Poor People's Campaign, which originated in North Carolina, where I currently reside. And I think if we combine voter suppression, election protection, voting machine integrity, Jim Crow gerrymandering, the ultimate form of voter suppression to me is the Electoral College. That suppresses everybody's vote, because who you vote for, the person who you voted for president, if they don't get elected because of the Electoral College, I'll posit that that's voter suppression. So we want to also start with Atlanta NAACP, a blue-green fund. What the blue-green fund will do is raise money to basically do, you know, two or three things. One is when we have very close elections, like what we have going on, excuse me, in Georgia, and I think it's going to be par for the course, you know, as long as I'm alive. There needs to be funding for precinct captains and for organizations like Atlanta NAACP and their 19 affiliates that just don't have enough money to get out the vote to the maximum extent possible. We want to raise the money ourselves. Democratic Party won't give that kind of money out to groups like the NAACP, so we have to do it ourselves. If we don't do this, we're going to lose a lot of elections needlessly, all because progressives really, you know, weren't thinking big and imaginative enough and bold enough, you know, to do what Ray's doing. The second point about gerrymandering and everything that we want to do a series of symposiums. I've talked to UDC Law School. We definitely can do it at George Mason, but we're going to have to teach people so much of what we already know, because I don't think, from my years of working in Congress, I didn't see voter suppression or election protection. It's not a high priority there. So we're talking about introducing a sense of the House resolution that identifies everything that's wrong with voting and election protection, and use that as an educational tool, organizing tool, because this has to get a lot of press. But it's really exciting, because I think this is unprecedented, and working with Ray McClendon, you know, what a joy to work with. What a brilliant scholar and a, you know, dedicated person. So I'm just really excited about this election protection, get out the vote fusion movement. And that's it. Just thanks for everything.
Great. Thank you, Joel. Thank you. And we're talking that is our long-term vision. And we'll talk more about that. As I say, we're not going to meet next week. We'll meet the week after in the 2021 in an entirely new country. And this is what we want for the next 4 years. And we have a clear vision, and we hope everybody is going to join in and change this country, because God knows it needs changing. So let's talk now about Georgia. We have Gene DeFort and Ray McClendon on the ground there. Ray, you want to start us off from the Atlanta NAACP? Joel, you might want to turn off your video there. And Ray McClendon from the Atlanta NAACP, and Gene DeFort from the Citizens Coalition in Georgia that's protecting the vote. Ray, you want to start in and join in? Let Gene join in when you're ready to go.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks, Harvey. Really appreciate the opportunity to be with you once again. We're in now the last 8 days, and it's all about getting the vote out. We had a tremendous number of events that were very successful around the state over the weekend. Even though it was cold for Georgia, we had great events on both on Christmas Eve, as well as on this past Saturday. We have also gotten caravans going around the state with buses and music trucks and digital video trucks as well. So the activity is high, and we are all trying to be very strategic and efficient in terms of the way we're combining in this coalition to deploy resources. It is working very well so far. Over 2.1 million people have already voted early. We have, this is the last week for early voting, obviously. So we got a full court press out this week with caravans during the week, with events coming up through New Year's Eve. And we will be doing door-to-door canvassing all week, and especially this weekend, making the final push. We'll be having events on election eve next Monday. So that's one of the reasons I share with Harvey that we wouldn't be able to be with you next Monday, because we'll be planning events for that afternoon and evening to encourage people on the final day. You know, because we have two major holidays and therefore short weeks, we know that we will likely have a drop off in some of the early voting. So that means we've got to have an even greater push this week and into the weekend. So we'll try to get the numbers up dramatically for January the 5th. So we want to thank all of you for all that you've been doing, whether it's been donations, phone banking, text banking, whatever the case may be, or just encouragement to your friends and colleagues in Georgia to make sure that they've gotten out to vote. It is definitely getting through. The grassroots campaigns are working. The people have pretty much tuned out the TV ads. Over $400 million has been spent on TV ads. And I think that folk have just drowned and canceled each other out. So what we really got to do is go door to door and get people to the polls this week and certainly on election day. So thanks once again to everyone for all you continue to do. We need you in this last push. So whatever you can do, we certainly appreciate it. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, we don't ask for money on this call, but we do make available where people can donate. Ray, if you'll put it in the chat, where people can send you contributions or donations. I do want to point out that, you know, we've had the Christmas holiday. We do have the biggest holiday, New Year's Eve, coming up, which happens to be my birthday. So everybody, you can all drink a toast to my birthday and to a great turnout on New Year's Eve there. I'll be a mere 75. God, that's a big number. Okay, does anyone have anything they want to ask Ray directly? And we'll go straight to Gene DeFord. Gene, I know Jennifer Tanner will join us later, along with Pete Pekarsky, Dan Wolf. And I've asked John Brakey to join us to talk specifically about the scanning machines that we're concerned about in terms of how the votes will be counted. Gene DeFord, can you unmute and come on and tell us in your view, remind everybody who you are in your group, and then tell us what's going on the ground there in your view in Georgia.
Sure. Thanks for having me. As I like to say, I'm a member of the Coalition for Good Governance, but I don't speak for the Coalition for Good Governance. We're engaged in some legal action, and we're very careful for those reasons about who speaks for us. But I've got some useful information. Turnout is very promising so far. We're running about 25% off the pace of the November election, which is awesome considering it's a runoff. We've got 2,000,001 votes cast. The promising piece of that for those of us who lean Democrat, and in my day life, I'm a strong Democrat. In my volunteer life with Coalition, I'm nonpartisan. The six congressional districts that are where Georgians have sent a Democrat to Congress to represent us, they currently are those voters are turning out better and stronger than the other districts that where we're represented by Republicans. So that is a very positive sign. Another interesting data point, because I know you guys like numbers, of the people who have voted so far, who also voted in the June primary, where we can capture Georgia, we don't register by party. So the only time you capture the party of a voter is when they vote in a primary, where you can presume probably maybe they're of the party for whom they asked for a ballot. There's some exceptions to that, but mostly that's true. So of the votes cast so far, the capture is 60% of the Dems who voted in June have also now voted for the January versus 47% for the Republicans. So, you know, you put those two things together, you see that our Dem congressional districts are leading in voter turnout as a share of the November election, and you see that Dems are leading in turnout as a share of who voted in our primaries. And we have some good reason to be happy, but Democrats are always nervous, or at least, I don't know that Democrats were always nervous until 2016, but we learned to get nervous once we got shocked with the presidential turnout election in 2016. So we're nervous. In Georgia, it is generally true that Republicans are going to kick our butt on election day. So we need to build a big lead. We had a, most people think we had a pretty big lead in the November election going into election day, and we wound up with a 12,000 vote margin only in the presidential election. So I would say that we can be happy about the trend line, but not not overly happy. The mix of votes, you remember in Georgia, we vote three different ways. We vote absentee by mail, no excuse currently. We vote in person on the machines in early voting for 3 weeks, and then we vote on the machines on election day. The ratio right now is running about two in person to every one mail ballot. That is roughly the ratio that the November election held. So that's, you know, that's interesting. It has, each of those voting types have some implications. You know, Ray is super good at and focused on turning out the vote. My focus is a little more on protecting the vote, both from an election hacking standpoint, but also just from a peer administration standpoint. And so they have different kinds of vulnerabilities. The early voting, you've all probably heard about the challenges to signatures. That's been a real thing. We had hoped by today that the Secretary of State would release the results of a thing he's calling an audit, but is actually really, I think, better called an investigation, because audits by law in Georgia are subject to public scrutiny. And this is not behind closed doors. The Secretary of State personnel and some folks from the Georgia Bureau of Investigation are analyzing a sampling of the Cobb County, one of our big metro counties. They're analyzing a sampling of 15,000 of their mail ballot applications for signatures. So we'll be very curious to see what conclusions that second guess look comes up with. And they've announced they're going to expand that to the whole state. It won't affect votes, but it will absolutely affect state of mind. There's a tremendous amount of excitement on that. The other thing that's happening on the ground in Georgia that is has the potential to suppress the vote. There's a meeting in the county just north of me happening right now as I speak. An outfit out of Texas, True the Vote, has decided it would be fun to do bulk challenges to voters' eligibility all across the state. They've been beaten back in all but two of the counties so far. That is, the county boards have met, considered their challenges, and rejected them. The ACLU has weighed in heavily that it would be improper. But that is active and ongoing, and they have been successful in two counties. Muskogee is a big concern. Muskogee leans Democrat, and it also has a heavy military component to their mix. And what their specific challenge is based on is looking at national change of address records and voter rolls, and saying, hey, Joe Smith put in a change of address to have his mail sent to XYZ out of state. Therefore, we think he shouldn't be eligible to vote in this election. As a system, as a project, the ACLU is calling it caging, taking big clusters of votes and examining. The counties that have rejected those challenges, all the metro big counties have rejected those challenges, essentially saying you've got to bring probable cause. An appearance on a list with no other data is not acceptable probable cause. The two counties that have accepted those challenges have now thrown those voters into a provisional ballot status, which is that the onus is now on the voter to again prove that they're a legitimate voter. And of course, a share of provisional ballots never make it across the finish line to be counted. So they're really putting these voters at a disadvantage for no other reason Then they compared two spreadsheets and got a County Board of Election to agree that those folks should be done. So that of course is an attack broadly on any type of voting, because they're attacking it from a voter roll standpoint, not from a you've applied for a mail ballot. So those are attacks.
And these are significant number of voters that are at risk, is that right?
Some thousand were challenged. Now the biggest ones have been beaten back, meaning the county boards of elections have met and not accepted those challenges. So they've dismissed
them. What is happening, Jed Packer, I'll get to you, about what is happening with the lawsuit from Stacey Abrams and Greg Palast challenging the 190,000 people that were stripped from the voter rolls?
It's not gonna have any effect on this election. There was a decision last week. I'm not up on the details of it, but the upshot of it was the judge is not gonna make them put anybody else back on the rolls because of that.
So they have effectively stripped 190,000, mostly people of color, from the voter rolls? Ray, are you on that?
Yes, Bob.
No, that's not entirely correct. These voters were purged prior to September. So there's been some confusion and misinformation about that. It was not a majority of voters of color either.
Okay.
We need to be careful on that one. Is it a good suit to have? Yes. The timing though makes it appear that it's directly attributable to this race and purges around current voters, and that's just not the case.
Glad to hear it. Jed Packer, did you have a question, Jed?
Just a quick detail question. I was wondering whether Ray knows whether all voters are not paying attention to TV ads, or just one party or other voters in one party or the other are doing that.
Yeah, I was texting you in the chat, Jed. I'm just too slow typing, but the point was that the ads are truly canceling each other out. If you were in Georgia, I mean, the barrage has just been incredible. I mean, it's just back to back to back each and every day, all day. And so it's canceling it out. Moreover, this is not a persuasion election. This is about turnout.
That's right.
This is, can you get your people, your base, back to the polls in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of the holiday season? So that's why touching folk on a door-to-door grassroots level is so important. It's all about getting your folks back out. I don't know how many of you follow Rachel, the doc, Bettercoffer, but she's done a lot of work in this area. And I have a lot of respect for her, and she's been pounding this with both Ossoff and with Warnock about how important it is to get your base back out. And if we do that, we've got a great chance. And as Gene was saying earlier, the preliminary information suggests that we are performing extremely well. The only thing I'm concerned about now is we got to keep that momentum going this week. That's what we got to do, is get that momentum that started in the first week of early voting to continue this week.
Well, I just read that Ossoff has raised $100 million. Is that right? And
has
it gone to the grassroots?
That's correct. But you know, see, but the problem there is about count money.
Ray, you just went mute.
Harrison over in South Carolina raised over $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I mean, you know,
money doesn't
translate necessarily into votes.
Does Ossoff or the
that kind of money, but it's all about the turnout.
Right. So we know from our previous discussions with Daniel Blackman, who's running for a PSC seat, that he is running a grassroots campaign, but the two Senate candidates are not. How would you characterize the nature of their campaigns?
Well, I'm not saying that they are not trying to run a grassroots campaign. The challenge is that these coalitions, there needs to be more energy put into folks who are local that can go door to door, who have connections to the communities that they're canvassing in.
Okay.
That's where we are right now.
I'd like to ask Gene a question. I'd like to just get a clarity, Gene, on what the effect is of the extreme right wing telling people not to come out and vote because of the whole flap with the Secretary of State and everything else.
Well, I think it's hard to predict. I think when you look at congressional districts, the congressional district the president is coming to on Monday has the QAnon candidate and is one place where a large number of Republicans who buy into that most extreme view of Republican view of the election, right? And they so far have the most lagging turnout numbers. So that is one indicator, right? That it may be having an effect at the margins. And if this is going to be a super tight race, small marginal effects on targeted populations turn out to be useful. But, you know, they are also Trump acolytes. So it'll be very interesting when Trump comes to town, if he gives a clear go vote message on Monday night, there could be a whole swarm to the polls, right? But if he does his typical all about me thing and kind of forgets to say you have to go vote tomorrow, or if he wants to punish Mitch McConnell for reasons we don't know, you know, whatever. The president is just a wild card. So we just don't know. But right now, today, it looks like they are lagging. That is dragging down certain votes.
Laura Chamberlain has a hand. Laura, are you muted? Laura Chamberlain?
Hey. Hi. I have one question for Gene, one question for Ray. Ray, could you just go over that again, the 200,000 that were purged? They were purged a long time ago. You think some of them have re-registered? Is that the issue? And then, Gene, I'm unsure, in the two counties where the county officials have allowed the challenges from True to Vote to go through, how many people are we talking about just in those two counties? If you could give us those numbers. Thanks so much.
Okay, so first of all, let me say on the some we believe have re-registered, but we don't have hard and fast numbers on that in terms of the 200,000. But they were, there has been some issue about whether or not there is misinformation about whether or not these voters were voters who had already voted in the general election and then were being purged. So that's what I was trying to clarify, that these were voters that were purged before the early voting period or the general election. They may have voted in the primary, but that is highly unlikely. In Georgia, this is a constant challenge that we have year round. This is nothing new, but it had nothing new in terms of it happening anytime during the year. Kemp did the same thing when he ran against Stacey back in 2018. And that was over 300,000 voters that were purged. And we worked hard to get a lot of those back on. So I was just trying to clarify that some people were upset and claiming that these were people who had voted in the general and were purged, so they couldn't vote in the runoffs. Indeed, there are more folks, there are over 66,000 people who didn't vote in the general who have already voted in the runoff, which is a significantly high number. Moreover, Blacks are voting at a disproportionately higher rate of those non-general election voters. So we're feeling real good about that, and we just don't want to get the misinformation to be a damper on people saying, oh, well, you know, I shouldn't vote because a lot of folks are being purged. Let the Republicans run with that narrative that it won't make a difference. And I agree with Gene, just to put a cap on it, that Trump is a wild card. If he stays true to form, it potentially will help. But if he did come in and stay on script, since Republicans disproportionately vote on election day versus Democrats that vote more by mail and early, then it could have a dramatic impact. So he is truly a wild card in terms of what his message is going to be on January the 4th.
Okay, remember that, of course. Now, this is technically a nonpartisan call, and we are concerned primarily about problems with voting. I will say that True the Vote, this Texas organization, is a known right-wing group. They say they're protecting the vote, but in fact, they're very partisan. One thing about no excuse voting, it won't impact this election, but the Georgia legislature, which is strongly right-wing, is already moving to no longer have no excuse mail-in ballots. In other words, if you want to get a mail, their vision is that if you want to get a mail-in ballot in a future election, you're going to have an excuse for why you can't vote in person. Is that correct, Ray?
Yes.
So
That will likely be introduced in the state legislature when the legislature convenes in January.
Right, and this is something
just another reason to go into Joel's point earlier, that this is going to become a year-round effort for groups like this and all of us banding together and not just come together for 2 and 4 year cycles, but be involved in this at the grassroots level, going in front of state senators and representatives to demand that they not take away not suppress our votes through this kind of onerous legislation.
Okay, now I just want to get a report from you, and then we're going to go to Jennifer Tanner and Emily Levy and other PP Pekarsky. We want to talk, of course, about how people, very few people on this car are actually from Georgia. And we want to understand how, as nonpartisans, we can help increase voter turnout and protect voter rights. Is there anything going on, Gene and Ray, inside Georgia right now that has to do with voter suppression that you are encountering? And then later, we're going to have John Brakey talk about the vote count. But are people being suppressed? Is the vote being attacked in any way that you want people to know about? Ray or Gene?
Go ahead, Gene.
Well, I think the ballot cure effort is something to pay attention to. Ballot cure happens when your mail ballot has been challenged. For most of the time, it's for some reason related to signature. Either you left your signatures off, failed to sign it, wrong person signed it, or your signature was challenged. The Dems started a very aggressive ballot cure program really stepped it up in the last election. And as of yesterday, of 3,500 that had been challenged, they had already cured about 1,000. So there were 2,500 outstanding. And of course, mail ballots are still coming in and being reviewed. So that ballot cure effort is really important. The stat for November was that about 50% of all the challenged ballots wound up being able to be cured. So it had a material effect and of course that voter has done, you know, everything Ray's group and other groups like it, you know, have done. They've gotten that voter to actually show up and vote and submit a ballot, right? And then the ballot might not count. So I'm pretty passionate about the ballot cure project as helping those votes to go the last mile so that they do in fact.
So a ballot cure is if your ballot comes in and there's a problem with it, either the signature doesn't match or, you know, you've missed the box or whatever, they will call you.
Call, email, send you a letter. We strengthened, one success of the last legislation session was to somewhat strengthen the obligation to be proactive in contacting voters. But if we sit back and wait for the contact from the election office to the voter, which is where by law it has to happen, very few voters will get cured. There's an army of volunteers showing up at people's houses with the paperwork needed to cure the ballot. And so one by one, one voter at a time, we're able to solve those problems for people.
Wow, that's a big deal. Yeah. Have you had any reports of suppression at the actual polling places during early voting?
Yes, there has been. And there are groups that are out attempting to intimidate at polling locations. We've had some calls on that. We've also had flyers appearing to be Democratic flyers, as an example, saying that early voting did not start until December the 28th. So there's a lot of misinformation, dirty tricks, and other things going on to suppress the vote, especially in the Black and brown communities.
And Melody Palker just put in the chat that she helped cure 7 or 8 ballots. Thank you, Melody, for doing that. I know here in LA, I got a letter saying that my signature didn't match, so there you go. What else? Are there other problems you're encountering? Are people being turned away on the basis of not being registered?
No. One of the other subtle voter suppression methodologies is the fact that in low and moderate income neighborhoods, there's a disproportionately lower number of voting machines, which creates longer lines. So, of course, a lot of the folks that are in those neighborhoods can't take much time off to go and vote. So that is inherently suppressing the vote when you have voting machine scarcity in low-income neighborhoods, and therefore you have the lines that are long. Now that's why we're encouraging so much early voting, where you can go to any polling location in your county. And people have come up with apps and other things now that will actually give you the waiting times by polling location.
That's impressive.
So that's important.
I want to emphasize two data points to layer on real quick.
Gene, let me jump. I want to emphasize real quick that we strongly oppose the use of those voting machines at all. There should not be these computerized ballot marking machines. We had Gene's group had made a whole presentation on that last week. These are the Dominion machines that Trump is yelling about. We don't want them there. People should be able to walk in and mark a ballot with a pen, and that's it. And so these machines, which not only cost $100 million, complete waste of the taxpayers' money, but also are slowing down the process. And hopefully we can get rid of these machines as time goes on. Sorry to jump in, Gene, but go ahead.
I was just going to layer two thoughts for you on top of what Ray said. One of the ways that voting is discouraged during early voting is by how many polling places are deployed and what hours they're deployed for. And we have two counties, Cobb, major counties, Cobb and Forsyth, which are trending blue, but still more in control of red. And they have dramatically bottlenecked the number of early voting sites compared to population. And when you compare population turnout for early in-person voting, and you compare it to the number of opportunities, how many different places you go, you see a hugely dramatic drop-off in early voting in those counties. So it worked. They gave the voters fewer places to go vote than some of the other counties of similar size, and in fact, fewer voters have voted. So that's that's one thing that is the Wild West. Early voting is mandated for days, but there's no mandate about how many different places per population. There's no standards, and there's huge disparities from county to county. So that's point one. Point two is, in the last legislative session, the legislatures did look at this question of voting booths disparity by neighborhood and population, and they put in a 1-in-250 rule. In other words, you have to have one voting station in a polling place for every 250 registered voters. Two things have happened. One, COVID. COVID has caused them or given them a license to literally ignore that rule. So we don't see a single county who is able to actually execute to that rule and still maintain social distancing because of spatial constraints inside polling places. But more importantly than that, what we hope will perhaps be addressed in this legislative session is with this new equipment. Remember, this is the first year we're using this new equipment, right? The actual bottlenecks are check-in. We have not yet found any substantial evidence that people are waiting in line to use the voting machine. As much as we hate them, and we do, the actual bottlenecks are in check-in stations. That's where the lines. And the Secretary of State has encouraged, put that emergency paper ballot rule in, right, which should speed lines. But they've encouraged counties to only measure the line as starting after you're checked in. And in fact, the really, really long lines are throttled at the point of check-in. So we've got to go back. If the legislature really intends to solve this problem, then they've got to address how quickly and how many opportunities there are to check in, how many check-in stations there are, not just how many voting stations there are.
Okay, so the big question now, and then we're going to go to Jennifer Tanner. What can people from out of state do to help speed the process and guarantee a fairer and more democratic election? Ray and then Gene.
Well, what we can do going forward is coalitions like this that really came together because of this extraordinary event with these simultaneous runoffs. We've got to take this momentum into 2021 and formalize these various coalitions to make this a national effort with local grassroots participation. Giving, and it's nothing against TV ads or anything like that, but TV ads didn't make the difference when it came to Gene's point about getting Cobb County to open up a couple of additional early voting locations when they were trying to throttle them back. It's not going to take, TV ads are not going to make the difference when we need people, boots on the ground at the state legislature starting in mid-January to voice our displeasure with taking away our right to have no excuse voting. And I would suspect that's going to be going on all over the country. I've seen that also in Pennsylvania already, that they're looking to do even more gerrymandering in Pennsylvania, although I'm not an expert in Pennsylvania, of course. But these swing states are going to be under continuous pressure, and we're going to have to be there to offset those conservative voter suppression tactics and know that our efforts in the spring and the summer will have an impact in next years and years beyond elections.
Okay, and Gene, anything for this year, this week? Ray, did you have anything for this week immediately?
No, I'm laser focused on getting out to vote.
And you have your, how we can contact you at the Atlanta NAACP. If anybody wants to donate, that's up to them.
Yeah, they've been putting it in the chat. So thank you.
Those are your donations to your tax deductible, right?
Yes.
Gene, and you, what do you, what about this week, and what can people do now?
Oh, just donations to the NAACP will support the events that we're having. Each event that we have in the 19 different counties is running us between $3,000 and $5,000. We're renting the trucks that are going leading caravans through the different counties. Those cost $1,700 a day. So the money is going to actually touch voters on a day-to-day basis. And we're paying a lot of folks are volunteering, but we're also paying our young folks who are canvassing in critical low propensity turnout neighborhoods. And we're paying folks $15 an hour to do that, our young people. Okay, so we need support for all of those things that directly is attributable to grassroots efforts.
And that's all phone banking, Ray.
Nonpartisan
turnout. Oh, absolutely. Phone banking and text banking are both going on as we speak.
So people want to do phone banking from out of state, they can contact the NAACP in Atlanta.
Absolutely. And, okay, and shout out to the
Center for Common Ground under the Voter Project.
Yes, that's NAACP our partner. Is using. Thanks to Andrea Miller and her group for Center for Common Ground for that.
Okay, Jean DeFort.
And this is just an observation from a small rural county outside the metro sprawl. I think that we are entering a point of diminishing returns with phone calls and texts, and certainly literature and certainly TV commercials. If I were going to impact the election in the next 8 days, give to groups like Ray, who are sending physical people out in the field, out in the neighborhoods, talking to voters. That is going to be the biggest impact over the next 8 days. And then in addition, the voter cure effort, the things we talked about, the vote cure effort and the protect the vote once it's cast.
Okay, Justin, Harvey? Had a hand real quick, and then Maura, and then and Jennifer. Justin?
All right, this is a follow-up for both the phone banking and in-person door knocking. Just to put out a talking point about the stakes of this election. This is essentially where people are desperate. We're in a bureaucratic coup that all of the aid for that people need, from unemployment to PPP to the consumer credit. The consumer credit lines are ending January 1st, and what's left is corporate bailout money. So now we are at a fight between the stockbrokers and public voting. Do you want to be able to vote at all? You got to stand up for your right to vote now before America gets privatized.
Okay, thank you very much, Justin. Laura and then Jennifer.
Yeah, hi, Jean. I had that one question for Jean that she didn't answer, and that is, Jean, of the two counties where the True the Vote are actually getting in there and challenging, how many numbers were involved? Just to give us an idea.
Muskogee is one of the counties, and that was a little over 4,000 voters, and a countersuit was filed just a couple days ago on behalf of one of the voters who is on that list and should not be challenged. So that suit just went into court, you know, right over the Christmas weekend to try to reverse that decision and force them to let those folks vote. The other county is another smaller county. I'm sorry, I can't remember which one it is. The biggest counties with the biggest populations have fought it off. You know, I don't know. The one just north of me is happening now, so who knows what they'll decide.
Okay, very good. Jennifer Tanner and Emily can jump in with Jennifer Tanner, and then we'll go to Pete Bukarski and Dan Wolf, and then John Brakey. Jennifer?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
So, okay, well, that's all that counts, right? Validate the vote USA.org, along with Liz Troop from Indivisible Georgia, for organized a letter to election officials in Georgia to help make the election more trustworthy. And with some easy asks. So they don't want form letters. That was an original idea. They won't read them. And they don't want people out of Georgia sending them, because they really don't care what outsiders are telling them to do. So our letter has three main talking points, which in a synopsis are they're kind of easy asks. We went for the simple but good things. Immediately announce a discretionary manual recount for all three races prior to certification. To have the robust testing, they must be conducted in a transparent manner. And requesting a court order in advance to do this recount by hand count. That's number one. Number two, require basic canvassing and ballot accounting. And then number three, remind counties to post poll tapes properly. They post them in really bad ways where nobody can see them. So we give it some specific directions. We're asking people to take the time to fill it out the way we're asking. So it's an individual letter and they'll read it. But honestly, we're not getting a lot of response from Georgians because it's a little bit of work. It's going to take you 5 minutes. So anyone that can send, and I'm going to post this in our chat, anyone that knows people in Georgia that care enough to take 5 or 10 minutes, I think this may make a difference because it's Georgians asking them specifically for things to do.
Very good. And you posted in the chat there?
I'm going to post it right now.
Thank you. And I want to remind people, by the way, we do have an active listserv, and Steve Caruso is posting that link in the chat as well. So if you want to join our listserv, please do. And we'll put this at the listserv as well, Jennifer. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, and I'll just want to take a moment while I'm on. Lulu Smart Elections has a wonderful letter to stop ES&S from being bought in New York, and it's going to be for groups and people. So someone has posted it in this chat. I highly recommend it. It's a fantastic letter. I mean, it's just got everything you ever want to be in a letter. So I wanted to.
Yeah, that's great. We appreciate that. Lulu, we appreciate her work as well. Ray and Gene, any you take a look at what Jennifer has done there, it would be great.
The letter is terrific. It's the action points that may be persuadable.
Okay, great. Very good. Emily Levy, did you want to jump in and add something here, and then Pete Pekarsky?
Yeah, I do. I want to piggyback on that point about the posting of the poll tapes in Georgia. So that's something that is required, but the poll worker manual for the state only says hang them on the door. It doesn't say hang them on the door so they can be seen from the outside. So that's what we're trying to do. And part of why that's so important is taking pictures or videos of the poll tapes is one of the easiest and most effective ways we have of checking the vote count. And it doesn't check against all the things that could go wrong, but it's a really important election protection action. Scrutineers working with some of our member organizations, Democracy Counts and Protect Our Votes, is promoting the taking of photos and videos of poll tapes on election night next Tuesday in Georgia. And we are actually hiring young people on the ground to go take photos at particular polling places where we want to really make sure in largely disenfranchised neighborhoods, mostly neighborhoods of people of color. And in order to fund this, we're actually doing a sponsor a precinct effort where for $25, people can pay to make sure that a precinct is included. We're still choosing the precincts, but if you sponsor a precinct, you get actually given the name of the precinct that you sponsored, so you can follow what happens there if you'd like. And we're letting people sponsor 3 precincts for $50. So the information about that is at scrutineers.org. You don't have to join or be a member of Scrutineers to sponsor a precinct. But we would love for people to circulate that information. I put it out in an email that went out yesterday, and I think we've got 30 precincts already sponsored just in the last 24 hours.
We'll put it in the chat as well, Emily, please. And Lissa has just tried to donate. I don't know, Ray, you're still on. Lissa's tried to donate to the NAACP Atlanta and got a message that the page is not working. So you better, Ray, if you can check on that, that would be great, please. Thank you, Lissa, for doing that as well. Anything else from you, Emily or Jennifer?
I just appreciate so much all the work people are doing there in Georgia. Thank you all for your hard work and hope you get to rest soon.
Okay. We appreciate you, Emily, and you, Jennifer. Thank you so much. Thank you, Lissa, for trying to make that donation. We'll try again. It takes persistence. If you also, if you want to make a tax deductible donation, we can do it through Free Press, the Center for Investigative Journalism. Bob Fetrakis is on the line. if you want to put it to Bob through the chat, you can contact him, and they do it also, and you get a, you can do it tax deductibly that way. Okay, Pete Pekarsky, and then Dan Wolf, and then John Brakey. Pete Pekarsky, you with us here?
Yeah, I hope I'm. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Good. It looks like I'm unmuted. Yeah. Yeah, thanks for the briefing, or asking me to brief. I'm the national director of the Election Software Project of the Columbus Institute for Contemporary Journalism. We are doing in Georgia on January 5th, or before January 5th, what we did on a 100% successful basis in the November election in the battleground states of Arizona, Florida, Michigan, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. I'm gonna hold off till I get done talking to put the article in the chat, but there'll be an article in there describing the project. Basically, what we did was observe that in past elections, the exit polls have shifted outside the margin of errors in a manner which shifted the outcome. That is, on an exit poll, which is the gold standard around the world to determine what happened, what the people actually did when they went to the polls and marked their ballots. That's the gold standard. There were shifts outside the margin of error in the United States, which determined the outcome in 2004 and 2016 in terms of the presidential race. There were no such shifts that we observed as per our current view of the data. In the seven states I mentioned, we ahead of that election, we got a hold of somebody in every one of the counties in every one of those seven states. We've done that in Georgia. We put the requests out to all 159 counties and the Secretary of State to be ready in the event that the exit polls indicate there's a shift outside the margin of error, which indicates the votes are not being counted the way they were marked. In Georgia, we are in a position to be ready to go into federal court or state court on Wednesday morning, January 6, 2021 at 9 o'clock in the morning, seeking to preserve testimony as to what happened with respect to the programming of the ballots and to obtain the documents necessary in the event the person filing the petition wants to contest the result once it's certified. That is, if a result is certified, which is outside the margin of error, and it looks like it shifted outside the margin of error of the unadjusted exit poll, which, as I mentioned, is the standard used around the world, and it's used by our State Department. The United States Department of State takes our tax dollars, spends it abroad to arrange for an unadjusted exit poll in foreign elections, and based on the outcome of that exit poll, that unadjusted exit poll, our State Department will either issue a certificate indicating the election was free and fair, or they won't. So that's what we're doing. I'll put the article in the chat. There's an email in the chat if you'd like to get a hold of me. We obviously have raised some money, but I'm going to hold off asking for anybody to contribute at this point and suggest that you follow Ray's suggestion. He's running a nonpartisan operation, 501c3. We're running a 501c3 now. But instead of asking you to contribute to that prior to the election, I suggest if you want to get involved in the Georgia election, contribute to Ray McClendon's group, the NAACP Atlanta. They got the people on the ground knocking on doors, encouraging people to exercise their right to vote.
All right. Well, listen, folks, we hope to God we can avoid that in Georgia. Everybody's talking about turnout, but the turnout has to result in a vote count that's real, that's verifiable, and that actually reflects the will of the people. So thank you everybody for your contributions. This has been a hell of a year. And let's just hope that 2021, Saturn and Jupiter are in full retreat. And let's just hope that 2021, we can get rid of the Electoral College. We can end gerrymandering. We can get money out of politics. We can get hand-marked, hand-counted, reliably scanned paper ballots, and we can have a whole new country to talk about, okay? I love you all. It's been a magnificent experience, and I look forward to seeing you all 2 weeks from tonight, if not earlier, okay?
Happy birthday and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Harvey.
Yes.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday, happy new year.
Yeah, drink a couple for me on New Year's Eve.
Happy birthday.